was, yes, Mr. Jones pointed that out.
Yes,
as we walked through
right, yeah.
his house.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a fourth year uni student and I'm here by myself. I spend most of time in my room, and as the panel has inspected the property this morning, my desk is right in front of the window, and I spend most of the time there to do my readings for my study. And I can imagine, like, once the childcare center is built, there will be parents picking up kids, they're walking on the side path, and it will just very significantly interfere with my peaceful enjoyment of my bedroom.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
No, I'd just like to say that childcare centres are a permissible use in residential zones, and that's where they generally
occur.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yes, so I just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Now, who else do we have? I think Annette Bowie, you said, wasn't here, Mr. Jones. What about Emily Joseph?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, wait a minute, you're the applicant, aren't you?
I am the applicant, yes.
Okay.
Am I able to...
Okay, well, tell me, what should we hear from you first, or your consultants?
The order we decided on was me first, if you're happy with that, as the panel.
Yes, okay.
Okay. Oh, is the microphone on?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I'm Emily Joseph, and I'm the owner of an applicant for 27 Kintore Street, Dulwich Hill. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you all today. There can be no better place for a preschool than directly opposite a primary school. It's a natural partnership where the children can inform each other and build authentic, meaningful relationships within the community from the age of 3 onwards. This close proximity to each other will help ease the transition for those going on to attend the primary school. As the name acknowledges, it takes a village to educate a child. Our early education plays a powerful role in our lives. The site was chosen because it's similar to many of the first houses children draw and the way surrounding houses talk to one another, creating a nurturing start to their education. Its garden is equally important. We are protecting the character of the area by retaining the facade to an all-embracing preschool where children, teachers, families and carers feel equally at home from the moment they see the front gate. It will operate as a not-for-profit, providing a rounded education for 3 to 5-year-olds to connect with, embrace and serve the local community. It will have above the typical staff to children ratio. To make this financially viable, we need to educate 20 children 5 days a week during school terms and hours. We will offer a holistic approach within a specifically thoughtfully designed building. Education is dependent not only on the curriculum. The design purposely celebrates and teaches the whole child and is seen as an additional teacher, with the learning spaces being designed through a child's lens. Children should be encouraged to find beauty wherever they can find it. They often do in unexpected places. The environment in which children are taught should reflect a strong, positive and powerful image of a child who is a co-constructor of knowledge, one who is resilient, capable, competent, confident and able to be a shared decision maker. Along with the quality of the educators, this is the very best way to ensure children learn in a stimulating and informative environment. The spaces have the intention of fostering children's social interactions and nurturing their well-being across all developmental domains. To spark their imagination and encourage them to be curious and engaged in the world around them, children educated in buildings of excellence go on to carry this ideal into their future. The design creates opportunities for innovative thinking, and children will be encouraged to value individuality and creativity, to process original ideas which have value. We think about the world in all the ways we experience it. The physical space influences the intellectual space. Children flourish through first-hand experiences. Creativity is as important as literacy and should be treated with the same status. We learn the most in the first 5 years of our life, and this should be reflected in the design of our educational environments. The buildings and its materials provide lessons in design, space, and innovation, which will stay with children forever. Natural light and its shadows are a powerful language. Light encourages curiosity, scientific inquiry and investigation, and brings together science, art and imagination, as well as adding an emotional aspect to any experience. The voids and openings allow for exploration of weather and nature and are an imperative component in the overall design. Each area has a different and important educational purpose. the bathroom respects autonomy and the right to privacy, while also taking into account developmental needs. While in the sunken library, they can get lost in a story or alternatively have moments of quiet self-reflection by engaging in an activity on the window seat while taking in the outside world. Children's imagination will be encouraged and supported by the uniqueness of having a separate art room, with opportunities for them to create projects over several weeks so they can revisit an idea, while the outdoor area teaches them to appreciate living things and enrich
their ability. Ms. Joseph, how are you going? You will have 3 minutes.
Four words to go. While the outdoor area teaches them to appreciate living things and enrich their ability to understand the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. Yes?
Ms. Joseph.
Yeah.
You said 20 children, yes. 5 days a week.
Yes.
Does every child come every day or are they different?
So you'd have the 3 to 4 year olds, like a traditional preschool, would come. There'd be 20 children 5 days a week, but you would separate the age group. So you'd have 3 to 4 year olds on a Monday, Tuesday, and 4 to 5 year olds Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But the number would stay the same, 20 children.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Any other questions?
Just one question, and I presume the number of 20 children,
yes,
is calculated on the basis of staff requirements.
Yes, it is.
Ratios to children, etc. Is it?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure. Well, it's probably a two-person question. I think you said your architect is here.
Yes, he is, Sean Carter.
And because I have concerns about the drainage lines, as you've heard from Mr. Jones, about the overland flows of water.
I also have Ian here who specialises in hydraulic engineering speak about the stormwater drain, because it's not my area of expertise.
Okay. And which are each of those?
Ian's the engineer who's speaking about the pipe.
That's Ian Warren.
Yes.
Engineer.
And then Sean, in terms of, he's the architect.
Who did you say was the architect?
Sean Carter.
Sean Carter, right.
Yeah.
And what about Jeff Mead?
The town planner.
Might I suggest, an efficient way of doing it may well be to have architect, myself as the planner, and the drainage expert up together, and we can work through. Yep.
All right.
A bit of crossover between those matters.
Yeah. And who's Victoria Alexander?
She's the creative consultant on the job.
Right, okay.
On the project.
Consultant.
Yeah.
All right, and you want all of them to speak?
Yes, please, if
all
possible.
All right.
Victoria next.
Victoria should go next, okay.
Three of us will come up.
All right. So, Ms. Alexander, please.
As you've heard, I'm Victoria Alexander, the creative consultant. Thank you very much for your time. I'm here because I think this is the most extraordinary project and a privilege to be involved in. I can't imagine anything more worthy of care than a small child's education. There's a school of thought that says we learn all we need to know in preschool, that we learn the most important things in our first 5 years. We carry what we learn then with us for the rest of our lives. Ask anyone what they remember about their preschool, and their response is most likely to be a description of the bricks and mortar. The influence of our first school experience reaches into every workplace, conversation, every home. Our early years define and shape us. The preschool we attend either enriches us or not. There is no reason that I can think of, and I'm sure you would agree with me, panel, that we should not aim for exceptional excellence when it comes to the aspect of early childhood education. What I have here is some props. Imagine each one of these to be a building envelope. This is what is possible to be built. Different shapes and sizes, but they all comply. They're all preschools. This is a preschool. that complies, meets expectation and guidelines. It's probably in a mall, and it may have some outside area because that's what you need to have for compliance. This is a preschool. It's got a little bit more. It's got a few trees, some environment, some imagination. It's probably got a director who's really very, very admirable. And this is what we're proposing, a bespoke preschool. A preschool that fits in within its environment, that will have a picket fence like all those around the houses around it, that looks like the first house a child would draw. These are an envelope, as I said, a building envelope. They have the same things possible. Add to that, and this is the same envelope, some imagination, some passion, and some desire to educate seriously well. And you've got something that we are proposing here today. It will leave a lasting impression for those that use it. It will maximise the opportunity of what is possible within this building envelope. And it's at the moment a caterpillar. It could become a butterfly. This building is the butterfly. The education the children will get there is a butterfly. Can I have
yes.
a little bit? We shape our buildings, and thereafter they shape us. We are seeking approval for a sanctuary for small children, a friendly, safe and energetic learning community with solid values, respect for the community that it sits within, integrity and appreciation of the world at large, an opportunity every child should be afforded. A place that will exude positivity, contain people with a zest for life, people who embrace others, people in whom we can trust, people who trust. Who wouldn't want a neighbour like that? This proposal, the way it accommodates the children's needs and nurtures their imagination, will provide lessons in design, space and innovation, which will stay with those who experience it and their families forever. Ask 50 people you know who would risk their everything to educate 20 young children each day in a not-for-profit way, in a preschool, and I'll leave you to imagine how many would say yes. This applicant is one such person. A dedicated, cohesive person. A cohesive community needs dedicated people like this. Someone who doesn't want to tell the story, but wants to be the story.
Okay.
Children are our future. I've got three words. Children are a few, one sentence. Children are our future. Let's walk the talk. Make education special. Please let this caterpillar fly and be a butterfly.
Thank you very much. Now, wait a minute, questions? No. Thank you. And now, who do we have? Oh, we've got the three. Okay, that's okay. Who will speak first? You've got four.
Yes. Vivian's here to assist. I'm the architect.
Okay.
Williams and Jeff Mead, the town planner. And
okay.
Ben Warren, the...
So, Vivian, you're not speaking. Okay.
Just to assist with.
All right. Well, who'd like to go?
What we'll do, Mr. Chair, is deal with drainage firstly and then go on to what we will make a request of for some modifications to the recommended conditions of consent, which go to a short submission that we put to the panel in the last couple of days and hopefully is before you. But we'll start with drainage in terms of
all
a
right.
technical matter.
So that's Ian Warren.
That's me.
Yes.
So the nub of this relates to item Romans 18 around the drainage pipe, which I'm sure you're aware of. So,
sorry. Can you get closer? Can you use the microphone, please?
Yeah, how's that?
That's better. Put your voice up.
So the nub of this relates to the existing stormwater pipe. It's a council asset that runs bisects the property, as you know. The nub is to divert or not divert. Council's position is to recommend a diversion around the building,
and it's primarily driven by maintenance requirements, which we acknowledge is very important. Our recommendation is to leave the pipe in its current alignment. There's a few reasons why we think that the straight pipe run will have a better hydraulic performance. It will be less prone to blocking. Bringing bends into a pipe introduces risks, a higher risk or higher chance of blockages. Pits are placed at those bends for the very part of the reason they're placed at those bends is to be able to relieve those blockages, and we'll have to introduce 1, 2, 3 new pits that don't currently exist. Keeping a straight run will mean that the council probably has fewer maintenance call-outs. The overland flow risk to other properties is likely to be exacerbated. Mr. Jones talked about the problems he's had with overland flow, and this property is a bit unique where the overland flow path does not follow the same alignment as the stormwater pipe. Normally they do. Introducing bends introduces a higher probability of a blockage occurring, which means that the overland flow will... the severity of the flow won't change, but the frequency of those events probably will increase. So we think avoiding that would be in council's interests. As part of the project, we'd recommend upgrading the pipe and renewing the pipe. So when I say upgrading, I mean augmenting it to a larger size, probably reducing the risk of that overland flow problem further. It would also reduce maintenance requirements from council. The pipe is already under the building in part, and so what we're suggesting is a marginal increase in the building over the pipe. It means that there's no new process council will have to introduce to carry out maintenance.
Can I just ask there, if it's already under the house, you can't enlarge it, can you?
The project is... during construction is such that we could, with some effort, plan the construction to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It would need staging some pieces, but we think it's possible.
Right, so it only goes under a corner of the existing house, does it?
It just goes
under the front corner that will be retained, but it's, that corner is the most off the ground, so we think we'd be able to, replacement process, get excavation a bit under the existing cottage that they've kept. You might have seen on site today that cottage is not in very good shape. Our expectation with these things is there's lots of rebuilding as part of that process to maintain existing form. So we think that through that process we'd be able to upsize.
Building over pipes is pretty common. It's not council's preference in this case, but clearly this house was built over a pipe. It's so common that Sydney Water, who owns probably the biggest stormwater asset owner, they have a process to tell you how to do it. We don't think it's a widely accepted process, a solution.
I'm still having trouble hearing you. You keep dropping your voice and your mouth from the microphone.
The idea of building over a stormwater pipe is widely accepted. It's so common that Sydney Water... Why is it?
Yes.
Well, it's a good question. I think it's expensive to relocate pipes. It introduces risks, some of which I've covered. Sydney Water's approach is, they acknowledge that it's in urban areas, there's often not room to relocate pipes. You could argue maybe that's the case here. The corridor we have is pretty narrow. I think in a theoretical world, to locate a pipe outside of a building is a great idea, while other things equal. But in
I think from a planning point of view, the issue here is that there's no nexus between the development and the need to amplify that pipe. So the pipe exists, it runs under the building, and but for this development, it would remain that way. There is no need for amplification, and
is the council requiring you to amplify?
Well, essentially, the next point which goes to this is essentially the condition requires it to be diverted, and the diversion of the stormwater pipe is at significant expense, which, reading the conditions, would appear to be borne by the applicant. It's a pipe that exists there today. It's a pipe that can exist there with the development occurring. It's a significant additional construction cost to divert it, and we would say that there's no power to require that. Not only no power to require that because there's no nexus with the development on council's asset needing to be moved, but further to that, there's a condition of the consent, condition 49, that requires an easement to be placed over it. A 2 metre wide easement to run diagonal through the middle of this property to cover a pipe that has been there for a very long time. Again, we would say that there's no power to impose such a condition to create a new easement across the middle of a property, which would obviously have significant impacts on its value at the same time as diverting a council asset. If there was a suggestion that council wanted to divert the pipe and wanted to meet the cost of doing so, we'd be having a different conversation. But as it is, there's no nexus between the development and what's being sought by the conditions, both to create a restriction on title and also to pay for the costs to move a council asset that has existed there for a very long time. That's the real issue. So we're seeking to have deleted the condition that requires an easement in favour of council, which is condition 49. And we're also seeking an additional design condition that accepts that the existing pipe will remain in its current location and that the construction proceed in a manner that does not adversely affect it.
I understand council's position is that not only are you not removing something that is underneath a house, now to be a childcare centre, but that you are building further out over the easement. Isn't that correct?
Well, there's no...
Over the pipes.
Yeah, over the pipe. That's right.
So you're making it even harder to get at the pipes if there's a problem.
Yeah, to a pipe which does not enjoy an easement and is effectively trespassing across the property.
Trespassing?
Yes.
How long has it been there?
I couldn't tell you. A very long time.
More than 10 years?
Yes.
More than 20 years?
It's more than 50, we think.
More than 50 years?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like trespass to me.
So the pipe is there. The pipe is there. The pipe can remain. The structure has been designed around it to retain it in its place. Mm-hmm. As I said, the pipe...
How has it been designed to stand...
Sean can talk to the design...
Is it to be concrete encased?
If we were to build over it, we would suggest that you would concrete encase it to take it out as an issue, which is the usual form you'd go down the... if you're working with the water board, they would require you to encase the pipe so it no longer becomes an issue.
Hmm. Have we got the document that came from the engineer when we asked the question?
Yes.
Oh, you printed it out, did you?
Oh, you mean the response?
Yeah, the response that we got. See, what we're told is the advantages in terms of ease of access and maintenance of having 23 metres of council's stormwater pipe relocated from under the proposed building far outweigh any disadvantages that may arise. Although the pipe will have bends, the angles are slight, all greater than 126 degrees, and will not impose any issues in terms of blockage. With regard to hydraulic losses, these will be minor due to slight angles involved and can easily be overcome in the detail designed by the use of benching of the pits and ultimately to use the largest pipe sizes. In addition, due to the large pipe sizes involved, that is greater than 525 millimetres diameter, blockages will be very unlikely. However, if blockages do occur, they will be much more easily accessible if the pipe is not under a building. What do you say to that?
With respect to the hydraulic performance, I agree it can be kind of engineered away by having larger pipes. I think that the risk of blockages, however small, is larger than it would be if it was a straight run.
Mm. Mm. And what's the size of the existing pipe? Do we know?
It's a 450, is it? Was it 525, yeah.
525, okay.
So we would, if in the diversion scenario, actually to your question, the probably to address those hydraulic losses, it would jump up a size to kind of offset that. Yeah.
Okay.
What's the next size up?
600.
Right, okay. Right, any more questions on that matter? No? What else do you wish to submit about?
The next point is the numbers, and essentially it's a perfect segue to the extent of the cost of those works, and then looking at the capacity of the centre. Obviously, every reduction in number causes some issues. As a starting point, this is an expensive design and expensive project compared to your typical childcare centre for the reasons that the two previous speakers talked through. In terms of the numbers, though, the real difference between the assessment report and ourselves is how we count outdoor space. The assessment report says that essentially there's some spaces that should be excluded as outdoor space. We have calculated the outdoor space based on the childcare guidelines that sit under the childcare SEP, and that and the regulation are very clear in terms of how we calculate space. So the Education and Care Services national regulation tells us that in terms of outdoor space, unencumbered outdoor space, that we exclude any pathway or thoroughfare except where used by children as part of the education and care program. The plan of management that's submitted with the DA makes very clear that the areas sought to be excluded from the calculation are part of the areas that will be used. And I'll go to each of the three areas in isolation. The regulation then goes on to say a veranda can be included as outdoor space. It says a veranda that is included in indoor space cannot be included in the calculation of outdoor space. So it says you can't double count it, which we don't do. In terms of the three areas, the first one is the front veranda. The front veranda, as is best seen on the landscape plan, has been designed to relate to the playground space in the front setback, which council staff have agreed that we can include the space in the front setback. There's a comment, though, that says that because there's a 450mm change in grade, which is about this difference, that's a problem and that it should all be on the same level to be included. We say that that front veranda will be very well used and is a functional space that will be used for passive activity. You can imagine children sitting, reading and interacting with various things on that space. It is not at all unusual to include veranda spaces as part of outdoor play area in the well over 100 childcare centres that I've been involved with. The,
how much area is that?
The front balcony is... it's in the order of about 12 square metres. We'll give you an exact figure on that in a moment.
It's directly accessible from the front gate.
That's right, yes.
I thought that really... And that goes into the waiting area. So is the waiting area proposed as part of the functioning space of the childcare centre, is it?
No, it's not.
Well, how can you use the veranda if you've got to get through a place that isn't used as part of the childcare centre?
Well, it's accessible in two ways. It's accessible through that entrance area from the main play areas at the rear. It's also accessible through the southern side passage. There's no requirement, and it's not at all unusual to have indoor and outdoor areas where you have to traverse through a space to get to it. There's absolutely no requirement that says you have to spill from an indoor area directly into an outdoor area.
No, but I'm talking about a supervised area. The meeting space and lockers and laundry, that's like a functional space and the entry space for parents to pick up and drop off their kids.
Correct.
That's where you sign them in and sign them out.
That's correct.
So that's like a semi-public area. And so you're saying the kids will be outside that on the street side.
So the way a childcare centre works in practice is that the children will arrive with their parents and they'll be signed in. The children will move to different spaces throughout the course of the day, indoor areas and outdoor areas. As you'll see in the plan of management, the outdoor play time will be approximately 2 hours a day in the different areas. So this means that the children will be playing in that rear space, the village space, as it's notated, and for those 2 hours, their carer, as required, there's always a carer, based on the ratios under the regs, that will move them from the indoor space to the outdoor space to partake in the outdoor play.
I can accept that in the rear. Mm-hmm. I'm finding it very hard to accept veranda.
If I can just finish that point, the concern appears to be that parents might be in that meeting space doing the signing in and signing out. The outdoor play does not occur at the times that parents are signing in and signing out, to the extent that at those times children are essentially in the pack-up mode waiting for sign out, or in the mornings will be signed in and won't be in the active outdoor play at that 8:45 to 9 a.m. Time when they're being signed in. So there will be absolutely no conflict between the spaces. The spaces will be used and managed, so that's not happening. It's not the case that you'll have the children playing on that front veranda as parents are arriving or leaving at the start and the end of the day. As I said earlier, not at all unusual for the children to be traversed from one part of a building to an outdoor space. So that's the first space. The second space is the space in the northern setback, which adjoins the sunken library. Again, the landscape plan is quite specific here in terms of what it seeks to achieve. There's that sort of triangle shaped area, which you can see there. There's stepping stones and various things for children to interact with. There's some images at the top of the landscape plan that show the types of space that we're envisaging. And through the side setback, there'll be use of that northern wall. As you see, children will there'll be chalkboards and drawing and various things for the children to interact with through that space. The space is again not a thoroughfare. It's been designed as an outdoor play space, a different type of space again to the veranda, a different type of space to the rear play space. So again, when we're constrained in terms of how we determine what is outdoor space by the regs. We can't just say, well, we don't like that space and so it's not outdoor space. The regs are very prescriptive, and in our view, that area strictly complies with those again. The last area is the upstairs balcony. There's no debate with the upstairs balcony that it is outdoor play space, but the concern's a different one, which is a visual and acoustic privacy concern. In terms of the acoustic privacy, the acoustic consultant has dealt with that, and the plan of management limits the use of that outdoor balcony to 2 hours a day and to a maximum of 5 children during those 2 hours. On that basis, the acoustic consultant has come to the conclusion that there is no oral privacy issue from that. Sean will just deal with the visual privacy issue. There's a very specific approach to the design of the edges of that space, and Sean will just talk to how that works.
Mm-hmm. So the balcony is very specifically designed as a cohesive part of what we thought was a design excellence approach to come out with this wonderful imaginative outdoor space for the children, almost like a boat's bow. It specifically pulls away from the boundaries to the middle of the property as it moves further beyond the property. The balustrading is at 1100 high, and I'll hand a document around so you can see. We've also angled the steel balustrades around in such a way that when you're on that balcony, you can't look out. So bear in mind, up to a five-year-old's eye height probably is no higher than 1 metre. The balustrade is 1,100 tall. Bear in mind, there's only 5 kids outside at any one particular time for no greater period than 2 hours. Through the plan of management, between 9 and 3:30pm, Monday to Friday. And you can see there in that diagram, there's an image of a building we've done in Beattie Street, Balmain, where you can see how the deep reveal effect of a steel balustrade actually provides what looks like quite a solid enclosed balcony. So we're very conscious of being, I mean, this whole process of designing a building for a preschool, but within the community, for the community, we wanted it to be a good neighbour. And to be a good neighbour, we believed, yes, we needed the outdoor space, and we wanted an imaginative outdoor space, which we think this is, but we're also conscious that they'll only be out there usually through the times when people are at work, for no longer than 2 hours for any group of five, and designed in such a way that you probably would never see the kids on the balcony anyway, because they probably wouldn't be taller than 1100, and the oblique views of the angled balustrades would make views from the side make it appear to be quite solid, as in that image there. So we would asking your consideration of this balcony. And again, we're happy for time restrictions to be placed upon this balcony. I mean, this is only a Monday to Friday, you know, 9 to 3:30pm preschool. If the panel were of the mind to restrict that time, we'd be perfectly fine with that, because we think that's consistent with the operation and the values of the preschool.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, question.
Surely the problem with the balcony isn't that we'll see the children, but that we'll see the building right up in the air in an area where nothing like that is happening.
It's approximately in zones where buildings can be. As it tapers away and pulls away, so it's a traditional pitched roof form, and it's really thin, so it's at the eave edge, so it starts where the eave is, and it starts raking away almost straight away. So you're right, you would be able to see it. I don't think you'd be able to see it in any great detail. We think it's, and I know I would say this naturally as the architect, but we think it's a beautiful form. We've got some very playful skylights on there, so when the kids look up, they see this almost like seeing stars through the roof. And given that we can make it private, and really we are the best neighbour, because for the neighbours around, we're the neighbour that's almost never there when they're home. You know, when they go to work, the kids come. When the kids leave, you know, a couple of hours later, people come home. We're not there on weekends. And yet we have this wonderful opportunity to have this great little play space that really pulls away and tapers away of a building that clearly can be nothing more than a preschool. It doesn't even resemble any other form of structure. So again, happy for conditions and restrictions around it always being a preschool and always being operated within these very tight timeframes. Again, around the idea of happy to be a good neighbour.
Can I just ask, on your south elevation, there's that balcony in profile from the side, and you've dropped it's fully roofed.
Yes, it is.
It's completely roofed over, but it's open in between. But you actually drop the fascia of the roof form right down to the door head height. So it's like a solid projecting prism the balcony.
It's a rectangular prism, you're right. The reason why we lower that, have that fascia element, is we're also conscious of the scale of little people standing on a balcony, and Cutter Williamson are known for their beautiful soaring voids, and in contained spaces that could be really joyful. But out on the balcony, where we think we want a degree of, I guess, spatial security, we've kept that volume down, so the soffit of the balcony sits parallel or flat with the deck. There are some...
But you can see when Mrs. Taylor says, but, you know, you've got a whole building out there.
Yep.
It's not just the floor level of the balcony, it's the whole structure.
It is tapering away, and look, you're a very experienced panel, so I don't need to tell you this, but it is tapering away with perspective, so the furthest edge that looks like it's got the deep fascia actually sits in approximately the middle of the lot. So, yes, whilst you'll see it, and I agree with you, I don't think it will be anywhere near as obtrusive as appears in a pure elevation like this south elevation.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? Sean, surely you looked at not building over the pipes and loading the development onto the, is that the northern side? The other side to the gentleman who spoke.
The northern side.
Yeah. I'll tell you the what actually happened. We merrily, Emily bought the property, contract of sale had no affectation, section 149 had no affectation. Nothing really indicated there was a pipe there until we were about to lodge the DA and we got a pipe check and discovered there was an actual council asset there. And that really delayed the lodging of the application, and then we went through this process of discovery where we had cameras put down there, and we actually did. I mean, council didn't even know that their asset was there, I don't think. So we'd fully designed the building, and then to only discover, you know, it, through a very competitive auction process where developers were keen to get their hands on this site and knock it down because it was potentially a CDC site. And Emily had this grand vision of wanting to keep this sweet little cottage because that was the representation of what children think of sweet little homes. And we fundamentally agree and really have embraced her dream. It just was unfortunate that there was this pipe was there that no one knew about, and it was long after the design. So, look, we did seek advice on what this pipe meant. We couldn't design this childcare and avoid that pipe in any meaningful way. And given Ian's very experienced and very lateral thinking drainage engineer and brought the idea that, you know, Sydney Water build over pipes all the time, you can encase them. And we thought, well, not only can we do that, but we can maybe help some downstream effects if council are of the mind to want to increase this pipe. Well, here was an opportunity to replace an over 50-year-old pipe that may not be in great condition with a new one, but slightly increased in capacity, and we could make that space available for council to do that, and that could be a good outcome. And then you just encase it like an engineering structure, which would effectively take that pipe out as an issue. And then it would allow Emily to continue on with this great vision for the community preschool. That's how the actual process unfolded. Yes.
The neighbour is correct in saying that at least six times a year the street is parked out from 3 o'clock for the events to do at the school.
Yes.
If you had somebody coming to pick up the children on those occasions, how would you do it?
Well, firstly, I think the comment might have been made in relation to the original application talked about some activities at the centre outside of hours, so from I think 3:30 till 7 p.m. There is a condition that's recommended that won't allow that to happen.
It's events at the school.
Yes. Yeah, so
street parked out, events at the school. How do we pick up your children?
So I don't know how many events are at the school. If I would assume.
Well, I'm suggesting we just take for granted what the neighbour says.
Yes, so let me keep going. I think the number was six events a year.
So it was.
Yes, this is a centre that runs 50 weeks of the year, 5 days a week. I would say that those events are a limited number of occasions, and I think that in our growing cities, if we can't deal with those very minor incursions, then we have real problems in terms of providing uses, this being a community use childcare centre. I think that if that six events a year at the school was to see this as not a suitable site for this use, I think we have real problems, given that the zoning prescriptively allows the use and accepts that there'll be things happening in this zone other than houses. So yes, there may be an inconvenience on those events. In terms of the events, I mean, again, I would question, we don't understand what they are, but those events, a lot of school events that attract a large number of people, such as award nights and things like that, would be occurring in the evening. And I would also say that a lot of events that happen during the day at schools, being a father of two children and going to these things, very rarely happen at 9 a.m. or 3 p.m. in the afternoon at the ends of the school day. They typically happen during the middle of the school day when children are settled in class and all those types of things. So I just don't think, I accept what's been said, but I just don't think it's a major issue that should warrant a refusal of this application.
And the children, as I understand it, would be picked up generally between 2:30 and 3 for a preschool of this nature?
Yes, so the plan of management very specifically looks at the hours being a drop-off before the starting time of the school across the road. So we're looking at a drop-off at 8:45. The school starts at 9:15. We're looking at a pick-up between 2:45 and 3 p.m. And the school, I understand from the documentation, I think in the council report, that the pick-up time there is 3:15. So there's been a purposeful skewing of that that's incorporated in the plan of management that's called up by the conditions of consent.
Of both Sean and Jeff Mead. The council is saying they don't think you've got enough room for the number of children. Say they're right. What happens when you then go before a kindergarten type establishment? How will they deal with it?
That's a really good question. So the way the process works now is that a development consent is required before going to the Department of Education and Community Services to get your licence. What happens in some circumstances is that the development consent may be granted on this number. The licence, they undertake their own assessment against the childcare regulations, and I've been involved in cases where they have found that the play area, they might exclude one area here that might reduce the number by one. You then get your licence for the reduced number, despite the development consent having that higher number. It's the way the process used to work was you would go to the department first and get their endorsement before coming to council. Unfortunately, they are the gatekeeper of the regulation and how they should be applied, but we have to go to them after council. But in the worst case, that they agree with council's initial position here, that it's 17 children, then that's exactly what they will give us. So we say that there's no risk for council. If we are wrong, we won't get a licence, and we would have to comply with the licence, which would override the development consent. We don't think we're wrong, and so we think that the consent should be granted on this number, and that should be left to the licence process if there's a disagreement.
Anything more that you need to know? Thank you. Well, I don't think there's any more speakers that I've missed out.
Sorry, just one thing. We talked about a landscape plan, but I'm not sure. Jeff referenced some images. I'm not sure you have it. If you... We've got a couple of copies here that you can see.
Yeah.
Is it something that's been before the council?
Well, I've got it in mine. Have you not got that? Okay.
It was part of the application. So.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Tell me just on that.
Yes.
Right. Tell me, did you include the area on the south side of the building, the south side setback?
No. So there was an area at the front, at the southwestern corner of the site, that is the, which is that area that joins what's referred to as new covered walkway. Mm. That walkway area has been excluded from the play area. So the play area starts at the green, which is the which is a landscaped area, and the balcony. But we have excluded that area of the walkway.
All right. How do you make the front garden secure? for kids to be playing in the front setback.
Yes, there's a proposed front fence, which is detailed on what sheet's this?
30,
sheet 30.01B. It's a 1450 picket style fence.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a fence in keeping with the language of the older timber cottages, but at the appropriate height.
So it'll have to have a secure gate.
Yes.
There's no gate shown on the landscape plan.
Yes, so again, having been involved in several of these, it will have a child-proof mechanism on it, so parents will be able to get into the site and out of the site.
Mm. Okay. Would you want to mention it? Will I mention it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if this came up in your discussions with the engineers, but I understand it did, that if the stormwater pipes relocated along the southern boundary, they have a preference, this is the council engineers, to be able to get a small bobcat along the root of the pipe so that in future years, if there's a blockage or if they need to maintain the pipe, they can get to it. Now, for that, they've said normally we want 2.5 metres clear, but they're happy to come down to 2 metres. Now, on your plan on the south side, you've got two things they don't like. One is a 1.2 metre side setback in the extension, and the five steps up the side. They would prefer the five steps become a ramp and the side of the building be 2 metres from the boundary.
That was discussed. There was lots of conversations about this pipe in the end. My understanding, in the end, they were happy with the general 2 metre easement for the majority of the front of the property, but happy for it to set back to the 1.2 easement for the extension of the new part of the property.
Right.
Any other bit of steps or structure that appears on that southern side, and everyone understands that that's sacrificial should the need to get a bobcat down that side exist. We also know that the diggers, bobcats, dingoes, and they all have a range of names. They can be up to 900 wide to dig up these side passages. So the 1.2, and council ultimately accepted that, was considered acceptable. Also bear in mind that that fence, if the need to ever dig that up, if we went down the path of this diverted pipe, there's that fence there. So if you needed a bit of extra width, you probably, you know, the council could probably, you know, take the extra width of the fence and a bit of the neighbour's property. They can do whatever they want with the pipe, and then they can reinstate it. Again, with the new pipe, this pipe had been there for well over 50 years and with no trouble. With the new pipe, we'd expect that we'd get at least another 50 plus years out of it with contemporary construction.
There's a legal issue with that as well, to the extent that for that to happen, there'd be a requirement for an easement to encumber the property to allow for access. There, in terms of the power or the ability to impose conditions like this in the absence of an existing easement for this pipe, those conditions, in our view, would not fairly relate to the development. And to suggest that a 2 metre encumbrance on title by easement for a bobcat to get along the side passage to a pipe which is not covered by an easement would be an improper application of a condition of consent. We simply think that the panel does not have power to impose such a condition.
Have you done, Mr Engineer, an analysis of the overland flow paths that come down from Beach Street? Because as you heard from the neighbour, he's had 2 inches of water through his house.
Qualitatively, yes. We know that the path, we haven't quantified it, though we could. But I agree with Chris that it probably is a real issue. And further to my point about not exacerbating it.
Well, you see, when I look at the landscape plan and the cross sections, the rear garden is kept flush with the floor level of the house so that you can walk without any obstruction from the house out into the garden. So clearly, overland flows will go straight through this place.
The overland flow doesn't come through this property.
Well, that's why I asked you, have you done an analysis?
Yes, and it goes through a different property.
Right, okay. Namely the
it's unusual because the pipe, yeah. The easement isn't over the pipe as such.
It's very unusual. Normally the pipes follow the old creek beds or gullies. For whatever reason, 100 okay. years ago, it wasn't built that way.
All right. Now, I have an indication from the panel that we should adjourn to discuss this application. And it's been drawn to my attention that we've only got one more item to deal with. So we're thinking we might defer our discussion and decision on this matter till the end and do the last matter that's before us before we might adjourn to make a decision.
Chair, can I just ask?
Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
You mentioned the condition that you thought was onerous in terms of the easement. Are there any other conditions that you didn't actually address those?
There's the conditions that were referred to in the short submission that was handed to the panel, but I'll just read those conditions. They relate to the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's condition 57 and 61B. They deal with the requirement to reduce to capacity of 17. Condition 49 was the easement condition that I referred to. There's mention in that submission of condition 5A as well, but that's related back to the that northern play area. There was a condition that suggested that a door to that northern play area should become a window. We're seeking that area can be used as a play area, and so then condition 5A should also be deleted.
Thank you.
Of basement parking. Thank you. Okay. Now, listed for this matter, I have only one person, Gary Chapman. Is he present?
Yep.
Mr. Chapman. You stayed on.
I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, panel members, for your time again. I was asked to look at this matter as a planning consultant following the issue of the council's report. I wasn't involved in the application in its design stage or preparation of statement of environmental effects, etc. You would have observed from your site inspection today that it is an isolated parcel of land. It is surrounded to the north and east by a three-storey residential flat building. On the southern side, there is a two-storey residential flat building. Within the visual catchment of the site, there are a range of buildings, but on the side of Tupper Street of this development, there are 3 to 4 storey residential flat buildings. The development, in my opinion, has been designed to fit within that character. It's an R1 zone. In my opinion, it is suitable development for the subject site, given its surrounds and setting, and contrary to the council's assessment report, I, in my opinion, meet or is in character with the locality and gets through the character test. The proposal meets the height control, it meets the floor area control, it meets the controls and development standards under the state planning policy for affordable rental housing and Division 3 for boarding houses. Where it doesn't comply under that policy is car parking. That is a discretionary item. This is a location that is accessible to Enmore Road and within a catchment of, if you like, the university, and discretion can be applied to the application of the parking control. There are some matters in the report regarding trees and inadequate information being submitted. These are matters that I think correctly could be addressed by deferred commencement conditions, which are in the draft conditions attached to the report. So we'd ask the panel to consider approval of the application given its context and suitability for the site, and that the outstanding technical matters to do with trees can be addressed by deferred commencement.